Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
On this episode of the Shape of Work podcast, we hosted Adil Bandukwala, ranked among India's top 20 most influential people in HR. In addition to being the Senior Director of Marketing at HackerRank, Adil is also the author of the book titled Outbound Hiring, How Innovative Companies Are Winning the Global War for Talent. Adil goes beyond traditional recruiting concepts to craft narratives that reshape candidate journey. Having worked as a talent acquisition advisor for years, he talks about evangelizing the talent by bringing stories and his experiences. We picked his brain to know about the role of analytics in recruitment and other significant concepts in hiring such as inbound and outbound hiring, zero-waste recruitment, building candidate journey maps, and the power of empathy. All this and more with Adil in this episode.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Joining me today on the show is Adil Bandukwala. Thank you so much, Adil, for taking your time to be in a conversation with us. Adil, can you please walk us through how your professional journey started? What are some of the challenges you faced along the way?
Sure thing. Back in 2005, I started up with an internet consulting venture that focused on Web 2.0, website development, and e-commerce solutions. Yeah. Catered to a whole bunch of small businesses spread across UK, US, Australia, and India. While I was doing that, I continued at it for about a year and a half or two. And then a couple of years later, I accidentally got into recruiting. And out of a small town called Belgaum, which is my hometown in Karnataka, I ended up hiring top talent for firms like Genpact, Deloitte, and Morgan Stanley. This was way back in 2007-2011. Social recruiting is pretty popular now. But back in the day, nobody had heard of it. It hadn't taken off at all. Job boards were still the norm. But I discovered fairly early that one of my first social recruiting sites was Ryze, R-Y-Z-E. And then there was something called Xing, X-I-N-G, which was a LinkedIn competitor then, predominantly Western European based. And then platforms like, you know, with Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Ning. I discovered fairly early that these would be a major force to reckon with while sourcing top talent. And to win business, I started attending these things called bar camps, which were unconferences that started happening way back 2007, 2011 types. Mm-hmm. And I started speaking at these conferences on how to hire talent through social networks. And through that, I was doing a lot of BD. As a result, in 2011, I met somebody at Dell and they hired me full time. They hired me to craft and execute Dell India's talent acquisition social media strategy. Mm-hmm. The goal was to support social media channels to help effectively communicate Dell's employer brand, as well as increase their overall application rates and hires from social media. Mm-hmm. There were about 100 people TA org in India back in the day, about 25,000 employees, and they really wanted to scale this doing social. Mm-hmm. So that's how I landed my first corporate gig about 5 years into my career. Mm-hmm. And from then, I started partnering with orgs like LinkedIn, Facebook, to try and scale our social media efforts. How do we build a larger following? How do we scale our employer brand? Mm-hmm. And one thing led to the other. LinkedIn saw I was doing some pretty decent work. So they said, hey, why don't you come on board and help doing what you're doing at Dell for a bunch of our customers as consultant?
Yes.
And I said, yeah, that sounds fun. And who'd say no to LinkedIn, right? It's a dream employer.
Definitely.
So my role at LinkedIn was really to partner with clients in India and help them understand the value, one, of direct sourcing, two, impact of social recruiting, and three, importance of employer branding in the digital age. This was a role in the global sales organization under the customer success function. So here I was, first started up, then took up a social recruiting employer branding gig. And then I figured when I was running my business, I wasn't really great at enterprise sales. I was a really good hunter, which means I was great at landing big accounts, but I didn't know the science of scaling them or farming them. And these concepts were alien because as an entrepreneur, you're trying to do multiple things, operations, sales, pretty much everything from scratch. Right. And that's where at LinkedIn, I got a chance in the customer success function to understand under the global sales organization, how do you scale accounts and scale them really, really big? And I did that for about 3 years. And from there, then I said, one thing that I still don't understand is how do you kind of market to customers and build a really high top of the funnel, both for the hunting function and for the farming function?
Okay.
And that's when, you know, a bunch of roles came along. I met Vijay from Belong and he ended up giving me the evangelism role. So I joined Belong as their evangelist, started building out the demand function at Belong back in 2015, November, did that for about 8-9 months. And then once I built it, handed over to somebody else, scaled the customer marketing function, did that for some time, ran the PR function for a couple of years, scaled that, eventually took up the entire marketing leadership role. And from there, in 2020, I got hired into HackerRank. To scale our, again, demand generation efforts to have a tangible impact on our revenue funnel, scale our thought leadership across new age formats like live streams, podcasts, the audio-only networks like Clubhouse these days, traditional gated assets, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So here we are. I currently run marketing at HackerRank for APAC as well as certain global programs.
Excellent, excellent. You walked us through in quite detail. Okay, I was just reading some of the articles of yours on LinkedIn. So I saw one of your articles there, which was on the onboarding hiring capability matrix for recruiters. So I also observed that, okay, you've spoken a lot about the data there. Can you kind of share your insights on the role of analytics in recruitment?
Yeah, so it all stemmed when, you know, we kind of discovered that there are two kinds of methods that you can use while going out there and hiring top talent. The first one is what we call inbound hiring, where everybody, you know, typically just posts jobs and then, you know, you wait for the right people, you wait for people to apply, and then you filter those through and eventually you hire. And I feel that's not a very efficient way of hiring. I think great hires are made via outbound. It's very similar to what happens in sales. And you'll relate to this, I'm sure.
Yes.
Because imagine you get a ton of leads, but none of them have interest. None of them have budget. None of them have the right buying behavior. You know that they will churn. So it's not right for your business. Versus you figuring out the right leads and going to ones that you know will convert because there's buying appetite. You know, there's a genuine use case. You know, your product will fit in well, right? So similar to outbound sales, there's outbound hiring. And outbound hiring, how do you define it? It's like a targeted candidate-focused approach that coordinates what we call personalized talent acquisition and business efforts mm-hmm. to hire people who will succeed in your company. Just like in sales, you want a customer that will succeed, right? And renew right. and renew big. Similarly, you want to hire people that will succeed in your company. To get started with outbound hiring, firms need to ensure they focus on two primary axes. To be successful. First and foremost, firms must prioritize and treat candidates just like they treat their customers by embracing candidate experience best practices, because candidate experience is the holy grail in recruiting today.
Yes.
Secondly, it's imperative that recruiting function today aligns itself with business from the front by making sure they align with the nuances of business. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, right? But whenever I've kind of spoken and I've been speaking to recruiters all my life now. Yashwant, I've been doing this for about close to 15 years.
Yes.
I have often seen that the HR team or recruiting team and business team don't meet eye to eye.
Right.
Because HR has their own nuance. They're yes. living in a very different world.
Correct.
And business is living in a very different world. Their version of a candidate, their exactly. version of feedback is very different.
Right? Very true.
And I've seen like most recruiting teams don't align with business managers mm-hmm. or business function. I think this is very important. So on the one axis, you have business alignment. On the other axis, you've got candidate experience.
Right.
And I think if you've got to be far and top to the right, where both are really high. So right on top of the quadrant, if you think about it, is what we call outbound hiring leaders mm-hmm. who, like the matrix showcases, are really high on core elements, which is the recruiting process, and they ensure they get it right, which is candidate experience and business alignment.
True.
Now, business alignment, what does it do? It enables both function, which is the recruiting and hiring managers, to work closely towards mutually agreed criteria, which is the processes and metrics. Now, you're
yes.
wondering, why am I talking about all this when you ask me an analytics-related question?
Right,
I just wanted to give you context saying
Very
that.
True.
How will you come to the process and metrics? How will you get to the base and the root of analytics? To do that, I think you need to be business ready. You will be business ready when you're delivering the right candidate experience and when you're aligning with your HR team.
Yes.
So Candid Delight will help you deliver a consistent experience across the candidate journey, resulting in what? Resulting in higher predictability throughout the funnel, right? What will this lead to? Greater predictability gives you greater conversion ratios, right? By virtue of the above two focus areas, recruiters also end up taking a very analytics-driven understanding of the specific pools of talent that they need to engage. And therefore, they apply what we call as a zero-waste strategy that maximizes efficiency in recruiting by leveraging precision targeting and to hyper-personalization to really attract, engage, and onboard the desired talent. So analytics can come and you can make massive impact of analytics, but you need to set up the base right. And once you base right, your funnel will kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. Very, very, very well went through. It was very deep. And definitely, yes, because whatever we have learned over a period of time is when we just give a requirement to the HR team with all the justice that they're wanting to do on that, they go on the description that is there on that. But very less, they get to understand what the business requirements are, what are the business needs. And that is where I think that delta is actually playing a role there. And then getting that into alignment is what this data will definitely actually help. Because that is where we can actually show that data, which can actually there's some realistic data that is there for us to just show it to the HR and then make them understand what exactly is the requirement of the business. Very well said. That's really a lot of insight. And there are good articles of yours in LinkedIn. I was just going to throw yet another article there on the candidate journey map and how the candidate goes through each phase till the joining. Can you share some insights on this for our listeners?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one that I'd written some time back. You see, what happens is, this I learned from the sales and marketing functions. But I have strangely not seen this in a lot of companies in recruiting, right? So for example, in order to help customers make a purchase, you know, what do sales and marketing teams do? They put themselves in the customer's shoes. They curate the ideal experience they want the customers to go through. And they align all sales and marketing efforts to create a communication strategy that ensures customers have a delightful and singular experience that binds all areas of the sales and marketing process. Similarly, when product managers are building products, when you're starting up, or even when you're running a large-scale enterprise company, if you're building a new product, they treat something very sacred called the user journey, right? This helps them understand specific use cases and problems of their customers and help solve to the best of their abilities. Yet, Yashwant, I have not met a lot of companies and recruiters who will say, I have a buyer journey, I have a user journey, but I ask them, okay, what's your candidate journey? They say, what is that? I don't have anything like that. And that's the problem. When it comes to recruiting, a candidate journey map is a visual representation of the different stages your candidate goes through as part of your recruiting funnel. And it's designed to help recruiters understand the emotional journey that the candidate is going through. Mm-hmm. So think about this, right? You and I both have had different roles in the past. You, Yashwant, have been more of an entrepreneur when I study your profile, right? But if you think about it, right, you must be hiring for a bunch of different roles at SpringWorks. So think about it. Let's say you post a role, and you've posted a business development manager role, right? You post it, suddenly 200 people apply for that role today. What happens is in the first 24 hours, there is this thing, oh, this is this cool job. Let's say if Adil is applying, yes. I was like, oh, this is SpringWorks. I really look up to this company. You know, Karthik is really active on Twitter. He often shares on Slack what's happening in his team and culture. You know, yes. He's out there. They just did a vaccination drive for their employees. You know, they're generous with their holidays. They're generous with their work allowances. Great company to work for. I'm going to go ahead and apply, right? Yes. So I apply. Yes. Next 7 days, I don't hear from the recruiting team.
Yes.
What's happened to me? I'm wondering what the hell is wrong. This is such a sexy company, right? I'm not saying this happens at SpringWorks. I'm just saying.
I know. I get your point.
Example, right?
I get your point.
I've applied now, so I'm at a high, right? You know, it'll be cool if I can get a response. 7 days, I get no response. What happens? All my energy is gone down.
Yes.
Right? Suddenly, after 7 days, I get a response saying that your application is rejected with a template. All right? But why is my application rejected? Right? I have sent you a beautiful cover note. I have told you how I can add value, but you just rejected me. So then, like, it's a low. But if this comes back and the candidate gets a good response saying that, hey, we're moving you to the next round, his pulse is back up again.
Yes.
But often what happens is, I've seen in corporate, is people say, you are selected, we are moving you to the next round. Radio silence for 2 weeks.
Yes.
Right? The candidate is wondering what is going on. And then what happens after 2 weeks? Round one is completed. Interviewer gives great feedback. Again, radio silence for 1 week.
Yes.
The point is, while this is happening, right, the candidate's emotional journey is going up and down, as if you were watching heartbeats on a CV monitor.
Right. Right?
So therefore, recruiters never take this into consideration. I think it's very important that you design a candidate journey that focuses on a few things. One, building an emotional connection with your candidates. Two, creating an empathetic candidate experience, meaning be empathetic to the candidate, finish the interview as soon as possible, finish the entire interview as soon as possible, so that there is clarity on the hiring manager's mind, there's clarity on the candidate's mind as well. Three, because of this, you'll be able to predict recruiting success. Four, you'll be able to optimize the process at every simple stage. For example, when hiring managers engage with candidates in the post-offer stage, the drop-off ratios reduce and candidate conversion increase. Yashwant, you work in the recruiting business. You will understand today when you're interacting with candidates, everybody yes. in the tech market is complaining. We're yes. offering 60% hikes, but candidates are dropping out of the funnel.
Right.
The biggest pain point is hiring managers don't treat recruiting as if it was their primary job. I think recruiters are there to assist hiring managers. But yes. recruiting should be hiring managers' core KRA, because they know their candidates. They know what attracts them. They can speak the engineering language. And therefore, it's very important that they take care of things like post-offer engagement. And when yes. they do that with platforms that enable them to do all this, deliver a seamless experience, I think you'll be kind of off the charts. So let me just pause there and see if I try to attempt to answer your question really well.
But definitely, Adil, you did utmost justice to this question. Because what really matters is that we strongly believe in SpringWorks is that the culture really matters. Because mm-hmm. money is secondary for many of the people. Yes, money definitely plays an important role for anybody who's applying for a job. But having mm-hmm. said that, what people like more to more is to work in a culture where they're encouraged, appreciated, and recognized. Okay. And then that beginnings from the day that they start applying for a job. And then, right, the way that the recruiter interacts with them, the way that the hiring manager interacts with them, everything matters. Everything adds one step ahead on the belief that that an individual carries on the company. And then ultimately that results in the good results. The candidate can definitely give good results when he or she is working for an organization. Very well said that, and it's a great learning for many of the people who get a chance to listen to this, and highly appreciated answer that is. And now that we have learned a bit of all these things, can you give some young startups and early recruiters some tips on employer branding and creating a solid employee experience, Adil?
Okay. Let me start off with candidate experience. You know, candidate experience is a subject that is much written, discussed, and deliberated upon. It's not just about candidate experience as a one-time activity, I'd say. It's imperative for recruiters today to ensure candidate delight at every step of the hiring process, and ensure that once candidates are hired, they are delighted at every step of the talent life cycle. Because people are trying to solve the top of the funnel today, which is, you know, just the candidate journey, getting people on board. But then what happens is people get on board and quit within 6 months. And that's a problem, right? So it's not just about the hiring employer brand journey at the top of the funnel, but it's also about the entire talent life cycle. How do you close the loop? How do you kind of move him to the or her to the next role and keep churning that journey and make that extremely exciting, right? It's also about relaying to customers what your brand story is, right? Like, for example, what your tech stack looks like today. Mm-hmm. Who are the engineering rock stars that they'll get to rub shoulders with and learn from? What does their career ladder look like once they join the company? Because you see, this is a big black box in most companies.
Yes.
So think about it. Let's say, you know, data science, and I'm a data scientist. Today, we know everybody's struggling to hire data scientists, yeah, because talent like that is very finite in India. I mean, where are you going to get guys with natural languages, like natural language processing, R, Python, right? You want people who work with structured data, decision scientists, very difficult data science, very difficult role to kind of fill. What happens is you tell people, okay, I'm hiring you as director data science. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. That guy starts wondering, okay, but what happens to me after a year? Like, can I branch out into two different
growth
roles?
Is wanted, yeah.
And after those two roles, what happens? And after those two roles, what happens? Can you show me a flowchart of how I'm going to grow? Now, all this data is there, Yashwan. This data is there in companies' ATSs. This data is there in companies' HRIS because everybody does growth planning and everybody does career planning. People build that. But I think it's about time corporates white boxed it. When they click, when somebody's applying for a role, it should show, yes, this is what I'm joining as. You perform well, you'll be fast-tracked in 1 year. If you're an average performer, 18 months, 2 years.
Yes.
18 months, 2 years, you can go into three different potential directions. Product team, data ops team, data engineering team. Okay, if I click on data engineering team, three different roles. Mm-hmm. From there, three different roles, right?
Yes.
It gives people a holistic view. Oh, this is what my next 6-7 years could be like. It gives me some vision. Otherwise, I'm just running for short-term problems. And that's why the churn rates in companies seem to be like really, really, really high. So like I say, it's not just about rolling out a great offer. It's going about beyond and helping them visualize and see the future, see the big picture. I think recruiters' job is to act as like talent advisors.
Yes.
They have to advise candidates on how they can make the maximum, I think the real way to put it is how they can bring their best versions of themselves to work and how candidates can realize their full potential and achieve maximum success. That is what recruiters are supposed to do.
Definitely, yes. It's actually the candidate getting to know what his growth path is for the next few years that he wants to be associated with an organization is very important because that's what will drive him or her to just come to the, get along with the work on everyday basis. And not only that, it's not only an advantage for the candidate, but also for an organization, because I strongly believe that replacement cost is much, much more expensive than hiring a new person. Okay, so that way, it is also an equal responsibility at the organization level to see that how they can retain a good candidate. Because at the first step itself, there is a lot of effort that's gone into identify this candidate and then bring him on board. And then retaining him and then taking him along is a big journey, definitely is. Okay. And again, coming back to one of your other articles, you've also written on AI and as a recruiting enabler. Don't you think that with AI and ATS, candidates are losing the human touch and they feel that the whole process is becoming more robotic in nature?
So I think, great question, Yash, Yashwant. I think first it's important to understand where is this coming from? Like what are some of the global factors impacting business today? And talent leaders. I think if anything, the last 1 year has taught us that business needs will continue to evolve rapidly. I think it's kind of in an acceleration to five key megatrends. First is the whole remote workplace model, right? The second one is next-gen business models like the sharing economy, on-demand, Uberization, hypermarket, subscriptions, so on and so forth. Second, or third is disruptive technology, AI, IoT, cloud, big data, so on and so forth. Fourth, changes in consumer behavior, which is mobile shopping, social reviews, NFTs, blockchain, right? And fifth is true globalization, which is increased competition and diverse workforce. Now, because of this, these five megatrends that we're seeing, what is happening is the business landscape is shifting. And when I say the business landscape is shifting, what it means from a talent acquisition perspective or an HR perspective is that the talent map is being redrawn. What am I meaning by this is one, supply of talent is shifting as demand is increasing. Two, over 90% of recruiters believe that today it's not a enterprise-driven market, it's a candidate-driven market, right? Candidates today have a plethora of choice to go and choose employers, because they want to work at truly with the best. So the narrative is shifting. 3, if you look at PwC's 20th annual global CEO survey, 64% of CEOs today worry HR is not fully prepared to address this challenge. Mm-hmm. This is a big problem. This is why the business landscape is shifting. Mm-hmm. The next important thing to consider here is that millennials are coming into focus. For example, talent today is entrepreneurial, passionate, and wants to feel valued. Over 42% of them prefer entrepreneurship as a route to success, which is why you see this explosion of startups in the country, right? They prefer employer brands that they admire as customers, right? And lastly, opportunity for personal growth is the most influential factor in choosing a new role. Now, I've given you all this context, right? From a trends perspective, what does this mean? What does this really mean for talent acquisition? Yeah. One, I think businesses need speed and quality in hiring, which means your ability to spot and engage top talent becomes absolutely critical. Two, candidates need to be engaged like customers, which means systems, processes, and technology need to be built for candidates, not the employers, not the employer. Okay. What I mean by that is, if you have a dated applicant tracking system that asks me to fill 45 different fields while applying for a job, forget it. I'm not going to fill that. You've lost me. Which is why if you see in the enterprise space, large companies, their bounce rates when filling out application forms are as high as 60 to 70%.
Excellent.
People get frustrated. I have seen companies, large companies, amazing companies with amazing brands, ask for stuff like PAN number. Yes. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yes.
Why would you ask for a PAN number? No, you see, when they were designed, when I asked them, they said, but Adil, we need a primary key. And I'm getting a little technical here because when you're designing databases, right, you need a primary key. Use email as a primary key.
Yes.
It's as simple as that. Use phone number as a primary key, right? Why do you want to get like the PAN number? Now, I know you need verification and stuff like that, but there are platforms that will solve the problem. And I think SpringWorks does an excellent job in kind of solving one of those challenges.
Yes.
But that can all be designed and integrated into your ATS later. I think employers started designing to optimize for themselves. I think employers have to design for optimize for candidates. I think that is where technology like AI and ML can be deployed and should be deployed.
Yes.
It should be deployed with the intent of driving efficiency, not only for businesses, but yes. also for candidates. Two, optimize recruiting workflows. And three, empower recruiters to have more genuine conversations with candidates that turn them into what I said last time, talent advisors.
Yes. Yes, right. It's a good insight. And you touched upon something about millennials, right? So let me just talk something about the millennials, ask you something more about millennials and then about your social media hiring and its reach. So we believe that the millennial generation, as we like to call it, is always available on major social media, right? So they are all dependent on the social media platforms, which has given a rise to this kind of hiring. Can you share some light on this and what do you think about the social media recruitment?
I think there are three specific areas as you asked that question that are going through my head. The first one is today, because of the advent of social media, I think data is readily available and very easy to access. With the explosion of social media, professional networks, job boards, all of these have enabled recruiters to access data that provides invaluable candidate insights. This ranges from proof of a candidate's past work to their growth patterns, to their circles of influence and networks. All of this can be leveraged tremendously from targeted candidate discovery to personalized engagement to passive talent nurturing. That's the first part. The second part is, I believe, analytics is ready. Right? Yes. When candidate-centric data has become easier to access, the analytics required to put that data to work today is also ready. What that means is data-driven hiring solutions today can quickly learn and suggest candidates who match your hiring needs, recommend engagement tactics that deliver high results, and even highlight potential red flags in your hiring process. And how is all this happening? It's happening through augmented analytics. Mm-hmm. Right? A third one, I think it just makes sense for everybody. Top talent today does not apply, right? This happens because I think one of the biggest problems in the HR industry is job descriptions.
Yes.
You go out there, people are writing, I need an architect for blockchain who has 15 years of experience. I mean, what are you smoking, man? Exactly. Is this technology that old? Come on, right? I mean, just don't write for the sake of it. Because again, this is a big problem where there is zero alignment between hiring manager and recruiter. They just take something because they want to dump it somewhere and get some applications. So I think what I was saying is poorly written job description, mass targeted ads, broken platforms, all of these drive talent away from applying. This is why only people who are not right for your business apply, and your rejection ratios are very, very high. The right talent is not applying. And why should recruiters spend precious hours sifting through irrelevant resumes or engaging unqualified candidates? That's a big question. Think about the prohibitive cost your business occurs in this process, which is why a hiring process that helps you quickly spot and proactively engage top talent makes much more sense. And social media can be a potential gold mine to solve this particular problem.
Excellent. Very well said. Okay. Yeah, Adil, you really gave us good insights on the kind of discussion that we had. And I'm very sure that the listeners will take a lot away from your experiences and then the knowledge that you shared with them. And thank you very much, Adil, for taking your time on a weekend and being a part of this podcast. And then we appreciate your time. Thank you so much once again.
Thanks, Yashwant. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. All the best. Take care. Stay safe.